Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, A Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Katie F., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, May 4th, 2026, and today we're reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is the man we shall call Jim, through one paragraph ending with, he came into contact with us. Comments on one paragraph only. Today's readers are, and thank you for your service, for the 12 Steps, Robin P., 12 Traditions, Michelle M., reading the text are Jason K.P. and Lynn F. The newcomer greeter is Penny C., and the host of the second hour, hopefully will come, is Hannah Yetta R. The reference number for Sunday, May 3rd, special edition, is 23,425. That's 23425. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating, from compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Robin P. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. Thank you, Katie, for your service. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Tennessee. 12 steps of OA. We admitted we are powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks so much, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Robin. Okay, I will now ask Michelle M. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everyone. This is Michelle M., a recovered compulsive eater in Arizona. Tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience.
Yes, I can.
Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop drinking, eating. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, and OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. thus problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality.
I shouldn't be doing this.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm unmuted. I didn't realize it. Michelle?
Sure can.
Okay. I'm sorry. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone, except the speakers or the moderators, should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is a man we shall call Jim. Through that one paragraph, ending with, he came into contact with us. Comments on that one paragraph. I will ask Jason K. to begin reading.
Good morning, this is Jason KP, our reader here, recovered compulsive eater and bulimic from Philadelphia. Our first example is a friend we shall call Jim. This man has a charming wife and family. He inherited a lucrative automobile agency. He has a commendable World War record. He is a good salesman. Everybody likes him. He is an intelligent man, normal as far as we can see, except for a nervous disposition. He did no drinking until he was 35. In a few years, he became so violent when intoxicated that he had to be committed. On leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. So Bill's asking us here if we can determine to our own satisfaction if we are alcoholics, and he's talking about what happens before we pick up that first drink. And we look at Jim here and Bill setting up Jim, and he says all these really positive things about Jim. And for me, I'm looking at this to say, what makes Jim an alcoholic? Sometimes I used to think I'm a compulsive eater because I'm really stressed, because I have some depression, because my father was really, you know, kind of abusive towards me and really hard on me, and my mom wasn't there for me, and I sat on psychiatrists and psychologists' couches trying to, you know, figure it out and name that trigger. I think Jim here is just a normal, intelligent man, maybe a nervous disposition. I don't think Bill's downplaying that, but he is, in fact, an alcoholic, right? And he only starts drinking relatively late at age 35, but the progression of his disease was pretty intense that he had to be committed. He becomes so violent when intoxicated. So this is a guy, Jim, I think Bill's talking about setting us up to understand how Jim falls prey to this obsession of the mind or these mental blank spots again and again. And I actually don't think I have much else to say on this paragraph today, so I'm going to keep it short and simple, and with that I pass.
Thank you, Jason, for getting us started. Okay, so although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your shares to every third day in order that others might share their experience. So if you haven't shared in the last, what would that be, Thursday or Friday, I would like to share.
Lisa B. in South Carolina.
Okay, Lisa. Janice P.M. Janice P.M.
Thank you.
Ann M., North Carolina.
Ann M. Someone else? I didn't get your name.
Mary Jo P.
Mary Jo P. Let me take a couple more in this first lineup. Okay, well, let's go with these four. Okay, we have Lisa B., Dorita P. Thank you, Dorita. Okay, Lisa B., Janice P.M., Ann M., Mary Jo P., and Dorita P. Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Katie. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you, Jason K., for your lead. My name is Lisa B., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from South Carolina. So what I get from this reading is, on the surface, he looked great. I mean, he had what most people would admire. And so what I'm getting from this is that there's this warning sign, you know, maybe a warning sign, I don't know, nervous disposition, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean he's an alcoholic. So anyways, the connection I get with this is that it can develop over time. It doesn't have to be an immediate downfall. It developed over time. So there may have been fear, anger, you know, and I can really relate to that. That's what stands out to me, that this illness, it progresses slowly, quietly. That's what it did for me, until it became devastating. And I always say there's another bottom below the bottom, you know. I know there's much more for me down there if I wanted to pick up. So that's also why my recovery has to be a daily process. My own healing in this on this journey, it has been slow, and that's okay. I need the consistency every day. I need my program every day. I need to listen every day and identify in every day. I listen to people that are brand new, which is so helpful, people that are coming back and struggling, and then people that are recovered with solid recoveries. And I need strong, healthy recovery because it reminds me what's possible. You know, if I stay committed, I need both. And I need the honesty of those still hurting because I want to be able to share and give what I have, been given in this program. But I think for me, the takeaway I get on this paragraph is that, you know, he really looked fine. I looked fine. I didn't look like a compulsive overeater, but the devastating illness was there for sure. The allergy of the body, but the most deadly part, that obsession of the mind. My mind is always going to take me back to the food if I'm not treated consistently, staying in a treated way with these steps and having that spiritual awakening. It's my higher power, the highest power that I need. So anyways, that's what I wanted to share. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Lisa. Okay, Janice PM, you're up, followed by Ann M.
And thank you for your service, Katie. This is Janice PM, and I live in Massachusetts as a recovered compulsive overeater. This, now, what's going to happen in this chapter, the writers are going to give me four examples to see if I, as a compulsive overeater, a real compulsive overeater, can identify. And the first example is a Jim, and boy, can I identify with him. Of course, I identify with all of them. But with Jim, I can identify him very well because you know, I was a high functioning woman. I had a great husband, a little mellow, too mellow a little bit. I thought that was the blame. He's too mellow. you know, I inherited a school business. But my mother always used to say, Janice, you're so nervous. And I always reacted angrily to what she said. I didn't want to be called nervous, but I was. I was so self-reliant because I thought I could fix everything, what I could do, dominated just to, you know, I blamed everybody. And, you know, it wasn't everybody I found out. It wasn't the outside world. It was inside me. Inside me, I had a nervous disposition. I was always restless. I had to go to something better. I started eating for comfort, because my mother was working and we would eat, we would play picnic and have peanut butter and crackers. And, but I wasn't really desperate enough. I could do this, go on diets, you know, and I did, you know, so I thought that was enough. That's plenty. I know what I can do. But I was always irritable and discontented. I was crabby, you know. So that's what it's talking about, his emotional being. I didn't know. I really didn't know that I had a mental twist to my mind. It was my thinking and not my eating. Food is what I went to get fixed in my mind. If I wasn't feeling right, if I was agitated, if I was unhappy, if I didn't get what I wanted, see, so it all came to inside me. That's what a nervous position, in my mind. It doesn't matter if I really, really could accept, that I was a compulsive overeater. I did that many times. I've been around a long time, but I just did the, you know, 1, 2, and 3. I didn't know what
that's
real
time, Janice.
Okay, dear. Thank you. And with that, I will pass. Thanks.
Okay. Now we'll have Ann M. followed by Mary Jo P.
Good morning, folks. This is Ann M. Currently on Cape Cod. And I wanted to claim my seat today because, as somebody else said, I am a recovering compulsive overeater by the grace of the God of my understanding. And to maintain that, I have to be checking in on a regular basis and using the tools and the steps. And so I wanted to comment on Jim. Now, on the surface, there's not a whole lot to say, and we've had 3 good shares already. And I think it's interesting that Bill begins his list of examples with somebody who does seem so positive and so together. Because it helps us say that it's not circumstances that lead us to this disease. By the end of this chapter, we see these examples. We also are reminded that we must go back to the doctor's opinion, and that nothing about my individual circumstances have anything to do with the fact that I am a compulsive overeater, that I am somebody who is drawn to addictive behaviors in a variety of ways. I do have an allergy of the body. I do react differently than other people do. I do have an obsession of the mind. I can well remember times that I would spend the entire time, I'd go out to dinner with a friend and spend the entire time thinking about how much are they eating? How much am I eating? Are they going to eat that? Or can I take that last piece? You know, and that means I'm not listening to the conversation. So here, I was successful, despite the fact that I was a compulsive eater from early on. That was real clear. But I didn't come into this program until I was in my mid-50s. And I tried all kinds of other things. And it was only when I accepted, as this textbook says, in the paragraph we read yesterday, on Friday, you know, what sort of thinking dominates an alcoholic who repeats the desperate experiment? Well, and that's what we're learning about. And I have that thinking. With that, I will pass and wish everybody a really good day. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Anne. Okay, Mary Jo P., you're up, followed by Jarita P., and then we'll be asking for more people. Go ahead.
Good morning. Mary Jo. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. This is Mary Jo P. from Illinois. I really love that phrase, nervous disposition. I mean, that's what I connect with. Because before program, I wasn't nervous. I was calm. I was the most calm person you knew, but I was also 100 pounds more than I weigh now, and I was eating my feelings down. So when I connected to this paragraph, I'd say, how am I like Jim? I knew I needed to enlarge my spiritual life, but I was like, how am I like Jim? You know, I'm everything's good in my life. I just like to eat. And then I realized, well, I'm feeling a little off. So that was my first identifying myself. I'm just off. I don't know. I'm okay, but I'm off. And so that was my journey to understand what's going on with me, to look at my feelings. And so it's been a progressive journey there as well, and enlightenment to understand what's going on. My last binge, which was in March, my sponsor said, what were your feeling before the binge? I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, you don't know? And I'm like, no, I don't know. And she's like, what are you feeling now? And I'm like, I don't know. And so trying to understand, you know, what is it that I'm feeling? Because I don't want to devalue what I'm feeling, because that is what's going to lead me to eat. I didn't know that. I never saw that connection. I thought I was happy. I was either, before program, I was either happy or angry. And so now I'm trying to identify the feelings that I am feeling. If I'm feeling off this morning, I need to do some writing to understand what it is. You know, am I fearful? Am I angry? Am I have high expectations of somebody? Whatever it is, or of myself. So I will eat over anxiousness. I will eat over nervous disposition. I now see I have a nervous disposition. I identify it for myself in different ways, but I have that. And so because I don't want to go to food today, I have to identify what it is that I'm feeling. And so then, you know, he said that last line, it was, on leaving the asylum, he came into contact with us. There's the hope. And I have not been in an asylum, but I have an asylum of my mind. I go into my mind and my own thinking and my own, you know, crazy. And so the hope is a contact with OA, with the 12 steps, with all the people, with the meetings, with the reading and the writing in the quiet time. And so that's really all I got. And thanks for listening.
Thank you so much. Okay, Dorita P., you're up, and then we'll be asking for more shares. And let me just let you know where we are. We're on page 35, the second paragraph. Our first example is a man we shall call Jim through that one paragraph. Okay, go ahead, Dorita.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. My name is Dorita Pippen. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. Compulsive overeater, really grateful to be here. It's a privilege and honor to be at a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Everybody do not get this opportunity for whatever reason, so I'm really grateful I have a seat here. Yes, what struck me was the fact that Jim did not become an alcoholic until he was 35. He did not become an alcoholic until he drank. I drank when I drank, you know, early in life, but my drinking did not make me an alcoholic. The only reason why I stopped drinking is because I stopped eating sugar, and alcohol happens to have sugar in it. That's the only reason why I stopped drinking. So, again, my drinking did not make me an alcoholic, but Jim's drinking made him an alcoholic. Now, my eating, now my eating made me a compulsive overeater. I do not respond like normal people when it comes to food, and I was reminded somebody was sharing about like eating out or eating sociably. And for me, eating is not a social thing, especially if I'm in a disease. So like before I became abstinent and sometimes during abstinence, eating was not a social thing. In particular, if I was going out with somebody who who wasn't necessarily my favorite person, you know, it would really just be a trigger. I'm looking at all the food. I'm looking at all the food that's on the menu. And so I'm just really grateful to know that my eating made me a compulsive overeater, not my nervous disposition or anything else. You know, I happen to have a nervous disposition, and I happen to have a diagnosis for it, you know. So I would be called in the medical field, I would be called like dual diagnosed. But I believe we all are. I just, some people are not diagnosed, but I believe we all are. In fact, well, everybody I've come in contact with, I'll say it like that. You know, but anyway, they're not my issue. I'm my issue. And I have to address my my mental condition, and I also have to address my my food addiction. So I'm just really grateful for this program because it taught me all of that. And I'm grateful that I'm finally getting help for my the other part of my diagnosis. Because I have OA for that, but, you know, my other issues. And I'm just really grateful for that. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorita. Okay, so who else, if you haven't shared on Thursday or Friday, would like to share on page 35, the second paragraph?
This is Charles.
Lisa A. N.
Lisa B. P. Michigan.
Lisa N.
John
A.
G.
Cindy, okay, I'm at the second group. It's always harder to hear people. Okay, I got Charles H. and Lisa. That's all I got. So if you're not Charles or Lisa, please give me your name again.
Aaron
Jonathan
K. in
G.
Michigan.
Aaron K.
Donna M. Donna M.
Cindy Donna M.
Cindy B.
There's another gentleman I didn't hear. Is that Tony B.?
Jonathan
another man.
G.
Jonathan G. Thank you, Jonathan.
Cindy B.
Cindy?
Yes.
Yeah. Cindy?
Yeah. Cindy B.
Cindy B. Okay. Okay. Is there anybody I missed? Here's who I have. Charles H. I'm sorry, this is not in the right order. Charles H., Aaron K., Lisa, don't have the initial. Donna M., Tony B., Jonathan G., and Cindy B. Is there anyone I missed? We could have one or two more, but we can just wait. Okay, go ahead, Charles, followed by Aaron K.
Thank you kindly. I won't waste time saying my name again. You said it two times already. I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and I want to drill down on nervous, not even disposition. Nervous is one of the many words that explains frustration, ego, anxiety, and resentment, which is a human emotion that most human beings are born with. And I'm so grateful because there's a lot of great fears, you know, that keeps me on board. You know, I think, for me, I used to be like, man, I'm never going to die. I die every day. You know, I die to this addiction. You know, my friend always says surrender. I die to it because I need to. You know, fear is a great emotion. But I think, you know, before I was recovered and I was saying I was recovered, I'd be like, no, I'm fearless. I'm a scared little boy every single day. I think, you know, wearing that word recovered as a badge will play me out 6 foot under. You know, I embrace my fears because they, you know, they make me become whole. Am I good? No. I'm probably in the middle somewhere. I'm bad too. But I embrace it all because fear is an emotion that will either freeze me, as the big book says, or to make me bust a move. I need to do something about it. Like, and all fear is not just, oh my God, I'm scared. Fear is, you know, fear can make you kill somebody. Like yourself. What's up, bro? Fear can make me kill myself. Fear of misplaced anger. Fear has a big spectrum. We talk about a spectrum disease. It's a spectrum. A nervous disposition. And we're going to read this week about what Jim did with his fear. Gave his job up, didn't cut. It's Monday. He didn't come to work on Monday. He came to work on Tuesday. And in my recollection of what the text is talking about, because he was in his disease, then he came. Well, I ain't going to let the cat out the bag. But fear, a nervous disposition, embrace that, Charles, and you will continue to recover. I'm not healed and delivered yet, because to be delivered, I need to reach a lot of destinations before going to my final destination. And I got fear in my back pocket, and I tap my butt like, yep, thank you, fear. We're going to do something today about this thing. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Charles H. Okay, Aaron K., followed by Lisa.
Good morning, everybody. This is Erin Kay, covered compulsive overeater in Michigan. I really identify with Jim as well. You know, he's a guy with a great life who looks really good on paper, but he has a nervous disposition, which really tells me that he has an abnormal reaction to that life. You know, he sees it through a distorted lens of fear. And I mean, Charles just hit on that beautifully. It's fear, you know, an organized, fearful reaction to life events. And I relate to that a lot. But here's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of people in this world that, you know, have great lives and are nervous. But he reaches for alcohol to take the edge off that fear. But the problem is he's not a normal drinker. He's an alcoholic. A normal drinker, a normal person is not an alcoholic, can reach, you know, have a martini on a bad day and take the edge off and maybe wake up with a headache the next morning. But Jim ends up committed in the hospital, you know, in the insane asylum because he's an alcoholic. So he's triggered an allergy and becomes gripped by an obsession. And once he starts, he can't stop until he's stopped. And it's just a really good reminder. Like, I can have a great life and be good on paper, but if I'm reaching for food to take the edge off my nervousness, any of my fear, this is where it ends, because I have that allergy and it will trigger that obsession in me. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay, Lisa, you're up, followed by Donna M. Lisa, if you could give us your initial of your last name.
Sure. Thank you, Katie, yes, for your moderating today. And thank you, everyone on the line. This is Lisa N, as in Nancy, and I'm from Wisconsin. And I'm so grateful to be able to share today and be with you this morning. I appreciate all the shares so far. Well, you know, I can relate to Jim, and I wonder if he could have related to me had he known me, if I would have ever told him what I was like, because I can be violent in my mind. I've done violent things, but when I think of violent, where does violence start? It starts in my mind. It starts in what I'm going to do to people. It starts on who I'm going to blame. It starts with who hasn't done what I wanted. And quite honestly, that would make anyone nervous. When you've got something going on like that brewing in your brain, it would make you nervous. It would make you want to eat. It would make you want to do things that, anything to calm down, run or overexercise or all the things that I did to try to calm myself down. And here he had all these things going for him. I mean, an inheritance of a lucrative automobile agency, a nice family. He was intelligent and people liked him. And he had all of that. Why would he have all of those things, we ask, and totally lose it that he had to end up into an asylum? Well, if he's like me, I have a disease. And I know that if I pick up food or any of my addictions, I could lose it all. And it's really dangerous and it's really deadly. And I have to remember that every day. And I'm saying it to you, but I'm really saying this to me. I need to pick up a higher power. I need to pick up my higher power. And that's the thing this program has taught me, is you have these thoughts, you have this energy, you go to your higher power first and ask that it be removed. And then you have steps, as it tells us, you know, in our 10th step, how to handle these things. But poor Jim, he did not know that yet. And poor Lisa, she did not know that for a very long time. And there were times when people told me, or I heard about 12-step programs, but I was, no way, I did not want to do that. For whatever reason, I was either afraid to do it, or I was like, that would be bogus, or I'm not that person. But today I know that I don't have to be intoxicated with food. I don't have to live a violent life in my mind. I have a choice, and I'm so grateful for Overeaters Anonymous, and especially Vision for You. So if you're new, keep coming back. Don't leave. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Sorry, I thought I was unmuted. Thank you so much, Lisa. And Donna M., you're up, followed by Tony B.
I'm Donna M. from Ontario, Canada. And I so relate to Jim. From a young age, when I tell my story, I say that I had an addictive personality. And I love the big book words on describing that: restless, irritable, and discontented. I never felt like I belonged in this world, and I looked to external sources to quell that. I didn't, just like Jim, I didn't become a compulsive overeater, and I was in my mid-20s. I transitioned from a harder eater to a compulsive overeater when I was no longer able to, after I got married, and I was no longer able to get the adrenaline highs from relationships. For me today, in this recovery of 6 years plus, I understand also that I am an addictive personality. So it's looking for other activities that I might indulge in that could give me an effect and block me from my higher power. Once I put down the food, you know, the first one was bargain hunting, and I was able to put that down. Most recently, what I've come to see, I was going through some challenging experiences, and I identified that I was using, well, I have been using screens and media to quell that nervous disposition. And it's only when I started to address it and put it down, that I saw the anxiety underlying there still, that I wasn't seeing in my step 10s. And so it's a process of growth for me to turn to God and let go of not just the food, but anything that could be blocking me from a relationship with a higher power. And so I'm grateful to share that today, and I pass.
Donna, did you finish? I think she did. Okay. Tony B, you're up, followed by Jonathan. Okay, thank you. Tony B, you're up, followed by Jonathan G.
I did not say my name this morning. Thanks, Katie.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you, Tony. There's a lot of names all at once. Okay, Jonathan, you're up, followed by Cindy B., and then we'll have time for a couple more.
Hi, good morning. I'm Jonathan G. in Dobbs Ferry, New York. And when I'm hearing this story this morning, I'm struck by, I hear voices. I'm struck that these sons, these four sons, all have to deal with their illness by themselves. And of course, they all fail. And when I hear this story, I hear the voice of my sponsor going over it with me. And I hear the voices of my sponsees as we go through and try and identify with this story. And I'm grateful. I feel filled with love and with gratitude that I can deal with this illness with the help of God and with the help of the people in this program. And the other thing that strikes me is that poor Jim, you know, he's at the zenith of his life, right? He's 35 years old. He's got a great record, war record. He's handled adversity. He's got a great family. He's got everything going for him. And he loses it all. So we don't have this illness as a response to the situations of life. You can be on a high or you can be on a low, and the disease will present itself. And only by reaching out to a higher power, which is luckily there for me, can I overcome this problem. So I'm filled with gratitude this morning. And that's all I have. Thank you very much. I pass.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. Okay, Cindy B., you're up, and then we'll have time for two or three more. Or four.
Yeah, thank you. I'm Cindy B. from Boston, compulsive bulimic and recovered, not cured today. You know, I really relate to this paragraph on several levels. You know, I think from the time I was a child, I could have been considered a highly sensible person. No, highly sensitive, sorry, not highly sensible. I hope I am more sensible, but highly sensitive person. And, you know, in my family, I felt a lot of sensitivity to all that was going on. So, you know, when they were fighting and that, all of that, I was very sensitive to it. And, you know, I'd watch TV and eat. That was my way of coping. And, you know, the one thing that this paragraph also talks about is that, you know, he inherited a lucrative automobile. So he was a salesman. He owned he was a businessman, and he owned his own business, and I own my own business. So I know, you know, what that feels like to be a sensitive person owning my business. He was also in World War, he doesn't say World War One or World War Two, but he was in a world war. I know that causes, you know, PTSD in people. But I think it's also interesting that he was 35 before he started drinking. You know, I started when I was really young. He was 35, and then he became really violent. And so violent that he really lost everything. Like, that's when he ends up in his family. He loses everything so quickly. And I relate to that in that, you know, I would say I was a violent bulimic. You know, I was bulimic for many years. And, you know, I could not handle my emotions. So I ate them down and threw them up. It was a ritual I did over and over again. And, you know, with the grace of God, I haven't done that for over 35 years now. And, you know, I'm also really grateful that I got this program when I was young. You know, I got to learn this when I was in my 20s. You know, it's still, as somebody said earlier, it's a day at a time. It does not, because I'm still, a very sensitive person, and I need to do my 10 steps and 11 steps and make my phone calls and give my service. So I'll end with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Cindy B. Okay, so we have time for 3 or 4 more who would like to get on the list. To comment on page 35, the second paragraph, our first example is a man we shall call Jim.
Lisa B.
J.
Kate K.
Okay, I heard Nancy J. and Kate.
Anita J.
Something.
Anita.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Anita. I knew Anita. I said Nancy. Sorry. Okay. There was someone before Anita, and then there's a Kate.
Lori H.
Sarah B.
Lisa BT.
Lori H. Okay, that's all we can take. Okay, I have Lori H., Anita J., Kate, there was someone else, and Lisa BT.
Sarah T.
So someone else, Sarah G., thank you. Okay, so we'll see if we can get most of those in. Go ahead, please, Lori H., followed by Anita J.
Family, may I be heard?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, please, Lori. Okay, now we can't hear Lori, so
let's
go on to Anita.
Hello?
There you are.
There
yes,
I am.
Go ahead,
I hit the button by mistake. So, hi, family.
Okay.
Lori H., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And, you know, I'm listening to this story and all your beautiful shares and, of course, thinking about how much I love you and need you and appreciate you all. But, you know, in this, the first thought that came to me, you know, he was a salesman for a concern he once owned. Ooh, there's the resentment. There's the hook right there. Imagine what's going through his head right there. And, you know, he's walking into this with a resentment. And when we don't use our program to get rid of those resentments, and I'll speak for me. Let me speak for me. I have to use my program and do 10 steps every single day. And when I don't do my 10 steps, it builds up for me. And I can get all kinds of bajiggity really fast. And I can't live my life like that, because if I'm not making kind and loving choices and I'm not present, I am hurting the people around me. I'm not present for all the opportunities. And I'm not practicing my program, which means I'm not practicing and I'm not making progress. What I'm doing is all the opportunities that this beautiful, you know, God of mine, this loving God is giving me, all these to do things over, all these new experiences. Like, you know, I've had a resentment from the last body of work that I did, and I wanted to do better than I did last time and be present and be more. And you know, I've heard it said that, you know, what we are is God's gift to us, but what we become is our gift to God. And I want to become more. So I will do my 10s if I recognize the resentment. I can't sit on it all day and just dump it in my evening review. It's going to carry over to the next day, and I'm going to have that emotional hangover, and then I won't be present the next day. So, you know, he went into this with a resentment, and it was a drink ready to happen. You know, just like that first compulsive bite. I'm now blocked from my God, and I don't want to be blocked from my God today. My God is my everything, my divine beloved, everything and all. And let me be present with all of you in this day and every perfect moment. Stay in the present moment where all the abundant gifts and opportunities and the progress is made. Thanks for listening for a minute.
Thank you so much, Lori H. Okay, Anita J., let's hear from you.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie. It's good to have you as a leader this morning. Anita J., living in the recovery a day at a time. You know, I, using that with a great big I, wasn't going to share because I felt so shaky lately. I wanted to just listen. But you know why that didn't happen? Because I asked God this morning to walk me through the day, let me follow and what he wanted. Next thing I know, I realize I have a lot to say, and he wants me to share it. So I thought, okay, start the day right by following what he told you to do. And I want to tell you, nervous disposition. Do you think always waking up for many, many years with a thought, impending doom? And that was my mantra during the day, impending doom, impending doom. You think that could be a nervous disposition? Now, I want to tell you, that hasn't happened in years and years and years. Well, I'm grateful, and I'm grateful it came back to my mind because it could come back. It's a terrible way to spend your spaces in between your meals or your meetings or talking with a recovered person. That's not what I want. But I never thought that I changed addictions until today I really realized. Would you think that finding on Netflix a series of eight seasons with 11 or 12 programs in each season, you think that I'm finally got three left, you think that could qualify as doing addictive behaviors? It's like connecting the dots. I need God to connect the dots, but I also need to hear people here on the line. They are the best dot connectors. And I just feel really good today. I feel like maybe I'll never hear the end of that ace season. I'll never know what the heck happened. Or maybe I could listen to one and spread that out all week for those three. That, I think, would be a normal person. But I'll see what God says. And I thank you very much, and I pass.
Thank you, Anita. Okay, so Kate, you may be our last share, but Sarah J., we may get you in.
Okay, hi. I'm Kate with a C, and my last initial is K, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And, the nervous disposition, I believe I had that from a very early age. My mother was a rageaholic. I used food to kind of numb that nervousness. And, for many, many years, I feel like I kind of controlled, I was able to control my eating until I wasn't. And then having worked the steps, and especially in this meeting, somebody had said, and it really struck me about how these emotions, like maybe normal people, quote normal people, can dissipate, they can get them released from their body, but it's like toxic to me as an addict, right? And these things build up, and they can be very, very subtle. So if I don't work my 10th step, I'll end up eating over it. And so it's kind of like it's a warning, but it's a hopeful. Like, yeah, there is a solution, and the solution for me is found in the steps and my relationship with my higher power. And he didn't drink until he was 35, and I came into program at 60. But through the years, I used other means to kind of manage that, the adrenaline from relationships, running, different things, and until it didn't work anymore, and I waved the white flag in surrender, and I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, Sarah J., we have 1 minute. Okay, let's see. Do we really have 1 minute? No, we don't. We have 6 seconds. So let's just go ahead and close the meeting. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Monday, May 4th, 7 a.m. meeting is 23,427. 23427. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Lynn F. please read a vision for you? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, everyone, for a great meeting. This is Lynn F., recovered in Pennsylvania. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.